This is the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 450 on the New Talk. So in this podcast, I'm going to talk about our penchant for predicting the future. Seems like, you know, I just did kind of a light survey of media tonight, and it depressed me, as it always does. It's very late. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I've decided I want to talk about our penchant for predicting the future in this podcast. Beware the soothsayers. So some of this podcast is going to be devoted to how politics is being covered. And I don't think it's being covered very well for a lot of reasons. And it's a theme in these podcasts. I talk about it a lot. The one thing that I've done in the last year that has been just fantastic, and it started last spring when I got Mobile Podcast Command, is actually go out and see for myself what is going on. And I've covered a couple of different events, two or three different events, you know, taking the truck over to Wisconsin or taking the truck down to Iowa or taking the truck wherever, and driven coast to coast in Mobile Podcast Command. And come to some different conclusions. They actually have been pretty eye-opening conclusions. So I am getting really, really excited because we are now a month away from heading down to Iowa. I've decided what I'm going to do is I am either going to go into or sit outside the Republican presidential debate in Des Moines on the 28th of January. I have steadfastly refused to cover the presidential debates on the Republican or Democrat side because I think they're a waste of time. But this is going to be one that's going to be held just before people actually cast votes in the Iowa caucuses, the precinct caucuses down in Iowa. So I'm going to be headed out. That's the beginning of the great journey across the nation, which will begin in Iowa. We will continue through the Mid-South, as I've talked about, over to South Carolina, down through Georgia and Florida. Most of these states are fairly early primary states, or they are Super Tuesday states, so they're very, very important. Now, those of us who live in Minnesota know what's going on in Minnesota. This is an opportunity for me to both get out and actually see what's going on, and an opportunity to have some eye-opening experiences about politics, one of which is watching the media cover politics. So I'm kind of covering the media, covering the event as well as the event itself. So I look forward to those. And one of the things that I need is donations for diesel fuel for the truck. Now, once I get out and start doing podcasts on the road, people will start sending donations. But you can do it through PayPal by clicking on the yellow donate button in front of at the very top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. There's a picture of Mobile Podcast Command, and whatever donation you want to make is very much appreciated. $5, $10, you know, $200, $2,000 would be great. That is used exclusively for fuel and occasionally for beef jerky and Komodo Dragon coffee and other stuff in the vehicle as I travel across the country. And I'm not saying that I can't do it without contributions, but contributions help immensely. And I really appreciate those who have contributed. I'm going to thank all of you in the New Year's Eve podcast, which I'm going to do this week. But I do want to make a pitch for donations for the Mobile Podcast Command Center because they definitely help me do what I do. The other thing I want to say to all my clients and people I do business with, you know, the office goes with me just as the studio goes with me in the vehicle. And just because I'm on the road or I'm going down to the Keys, you know, I'm going to go to Texas, I'm going to all these places. And people in the Midwest think, oh, well, I was going to call you, but you were out of town. I'm on a cell phone. I'm in a truck that has all the stuff that I need with me. So feel free to call me if you're a client or if you want to do business with the BobDavisPodcast.com. I appreciate that. And thanks in advance for the donations. And thanks to all of you who have made donations. And again, I'll mention everybody in my big New Year's Eve thanks, which I do every year. And that's all. I'll tell you more. But I'll tell you what, traveling is really the best thing in terms of understanding what is going on that I can do. And bringing it to you is the best thing I can do for you rather than sitting here and reading the news. And I'm going stir crazy doing that. And I'm going to have to sit here for 4 more weeks before I can hit the road. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure you've heard the warning in the Bible or the warning that is attributed to the Bible, beware of the soothsayers. I don't know specifically where that is or whether it's even in there. you know, I'm trying to remember where I first saw that, and it was probably in some pamphlet that a girl down the street used to hand out because she was a Jesus freak. She used to hand out these pamphlets, and I seem to recall reading that when I was a kid, Beware the Soothsayers. And I suppose what it's referring to are a number of warnings against the practitioners of tarot card and astrology and other kinds of predictions. So that got me thinking, and I'll tell you what started it. The soothsayer thing, didn't come until later when I was thinking about, well, what am I going to do a podcast about? And so I made the mistake that I always do, which is, oh, I'll go online and I'll pull a bunch of news stories and print them out and read them. And I've been doing this all week, pretty much. And so I go through and I pull these stories and I put them in my reader. If you have a Mac, there's a section where you can save news stories on a reader, and then you can either print them out or read them. And usually what I do is I'll have 200 or 300 stories that I find, on any given day or a couple of days. And I go through and I regularly weed out that reader because some of that stuff is just not even worth bothering with, most of it. And then I print out a fraction of those stories and I read them. And then I go through and sort of pick the stories that I feel are salient in an effort to pass that analysis onto you so that you can be forewarned about certain stories. And one of the things that I've been very sensitive to lately is telling people what's going to happen. So the effort to pick news stories has dwindled a little bit because that's kind of left over from the radio days when, you know, you would prep every single day and you would be driven by news events. And you would end up, I would end up like, for example, I've got this pile of stories right here. And at the top of the list is two stories. One, a reaction to something former Labor Secretary Robert Reich wrote recently in which he's complaining that Uber and other types I don't know what you'd call them, labor on demand type businesses, gig type businesses, short shrift the worker, and it's bad and we have to outlaw them. And then this other story is a story from a woman who wrote a piece in the Tribune in Minneapolis and St. Paul talking about why she loves freelancing and how much time she saved. Now, in the old days, those two articles would form the basis of a topic that we would spend a segment or two talking about in an effort to see if we could get some people to call in and comment. And then they would say a bunch of stuff that didn't mean anything and wouldn't really advance the story at all. And there you have it. Well, old habits die hard. I mean, this is, in a sense, what I do. And I go back and forth with this. And then I have a bunch of stories about the weather because we're in the midst of a storm watch here. And I have a bunch of stories about the economy. And I have a story about how Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison is developing a new voter turnout strategy for Democrats, and the Republicans are again playing catch up in Minnesota for this, and then a whole thing about falling oil prices. And so these are kind of a mixture of stories of things that I would normally have talked about. And I'm sitting here looking at this stuff, and this soothsayer thing is rattling through my head. And I've learned doing podcasting that sometimes the best questions are the questions that are the ones that are playing in the back of your mind that you would never get to if you were doing radio because you're constantly watching the time. You're constantly looking at, oh, we got a break coming up. You know, we got to focus on what we're talking about. We got to get this call. We got to do this. We got to do that. So you don't, the stuff that's going on in the back of your head just kind of gets, you know, suppressed. Whereas when you do this, the stuff in the back of your head really is the stuff that should be on the surface. And so if something is playing over and over in your head, like Beware the Soothsayers, there's a reason for that. And the big challenge is to try to figure out why am I thinking about that? And the connection that I made tonight at this late hour after, you know, watching Deutschland 83 with my son and eating a steak and doing some other stuff, and then finally reading. It's now almost 3 o'clock in the morning, which is the middle of the afternoon for me. that's a whole other story. But the uptake there is, I am actually shocked, and I feel the need to point out, and I do occasionally, and I have done it peripherally, but I've never done a podcast specifically about it. And it's, this is not a podcast where I'm going to give you examples so much. I will. But a podcast where I'm kind of saying, watch out for this. And I've mentioned this a couple of times, but I think that it deserves a whole podcast. And that is this practice, this penchant that we have in this society for predicting the future. This is like, I got to tell you, you know, I see a pretty good survey of all that is broadcast and all that is written every day, whether it's commentary, whether it is rehash, whether we're looking at Yahoo News or Google or, you know, any of the network news sites or CNN or Fox or the newspapers or any of the aggregator websites that I often talk about. There is a tremendous amount of commentary and what passes as news coverage in every area, whether it is business or politics or even weather, of predicting the future, of essentially soothsaying. Now, what is a soothsayer? Well, I looked it up, and I didn't save the definition, so I'm quoting from memory. Basically, a soothsayer is anyone who predicts the future. And, you know, Merriam-Webster likes to give you more detail. Like, if you want the more detailed definition, you can take the more detailed definition. But Merriam-Webster takes the definition of anyone who uses different means up to and including rational means to, quote, unquote, predict the future. And I read that, and I mean, if you look at the actual definition of soothsayer, which is one who predicts the future, then you would have to include most of the media and most of the media output in this country. And really the West, you know, we're sort of the leaders in media. So, I mean, I don't look at media in other parts of the world, so I couldn't tell you what the Indonesian media is doing or whatever, but the British do it too. And that is, we are going to predict the future. We're gonna use a couple of loose facts that may or may not be true, and then we're going to tell you what's going to happen. Now, there's various examples. I mean, there are daily examples regarding the Islamic State, you know, various types of different pieces of it. It's an existential threat, or it isn't, based on a few shadowy facts. They're going to do this. They're going to do this based on a few shadowy facts. And nobody really knows, because none of these reporters are inside the Islamic State. There have only been a couple of sources that have come out of the Islamic State, and most of them are impeachable, except for that reporter from Spiegel that I've told you about a couple different times, who embedded with ISIS for 3 or 4 weeks and really wrote and has – he actually has a book out and has some really great stuff. But again, he's reporting what he saw. He's saying, here's the who, what, where, why, when, and where of what I saw. In fact, we'll leave the why out, and I will just tell you what I saw. And here are my conclusions based on what I saw. That, to me, is reporting. But so much of this stuff is – and one of my favorites, the economic stuff is terrible. One of my favorites was and you see it all the time. It started out as soon as the price of gas started going down, because the price of oil plummeted for various reasons. They started writing articles about how this is great. It's going to act like a tax cut, and we're going to see economic growth because cheap oil means economic growth. Or at least it's always been that way in the past. So we're going to say that that's true. Well, it didn't turn out that way. I mean, our third quarter numbers have been revised down now to 2%. 2% GDP is not really solid dynamic growth. It certainly isn't even robust growth. It's sort of very slow growth. And we've had very slow economic growth for a while. And we see struggling in the retail sector. I predicted that, I'm sorry to say. But I think I said, based on what I was seeing, you know, you're going to probably see some pretty good deals after the new year, because they haven't sold their inventories, which turned out to be true. And we're starting to see the articles about that. But the reason I said that that is because there was a whole spate of articles about what a great retail season it was going to be, and don't worry, there was no basis to say that. In fact, again, it was predicting the future based on what had always happened in the past. And the whole thing about cheap gas acting like a tax cut is a ridiculous statement by definition, because it's not a tax cut. It's simply a lower price of a commodity. And generally, when there's a lower price of a commodity, it also means a slowdown in the producers of that economy, because there's no way for them to increase their prices to increase their profits, so because of demand or whatever. So lower prices generally are not always a good news. It's just like mergers. And I did a whole podcast about that, when you see lots of mergers, and you'll see that touted as a sign of economic growth, but generally mergers and acquisitions are a sign of weakness, because companies are either looking to merge to avoid taxation or make their books look better because their books aren't good, and the profit picture for companies has not been good. So I think you can take a list of facts and you can say, this is what's going on, and then you can say, here's what I think. But I think a lot of the media spends time trying to tell you what's going to happen, whether they know it or not. Nowhere is that more visible and frustrating than in politics. And I guess that's the source of a lot of my frustration. Thank God Iowa is happening February 1st, because and you really see it this week, because there's really nothing to report. People have gone home for Christmas. They're at their grandmother's house. They're going stir crazy at the cabin. They're going stir crazy with their whole family in the house. They're going stir crazy with one more scheduled face stuffing. The kids are eating too much sugar. I mean, you could go on with the whole list. And we love, Christmas is great. It's great to spend time with family and everything else. I don't have the bah humbug anti-Christmas thing anymore, because I really opt out of most of that stuff. But in general, people have gone to ground, and they will stay there until after New Year's, a big New Year's celebration. And even then, it will be quiet all the way up to and through the Super Bowl. But thank God the Iowa caucus is coming up on February 1st, because at least then we'll have something that has actually happened that we will be able to talk about in politics. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I think the penchant for predicting the news in politics is, and why it is so frustrating to me. Well, talking about going stir crazy this time of year, the only thing that saves me from going absolutely crazy is yoga. In fact, I would say that yoga has a lot to do with how I can sit very quietly by myself and just drink my coffee in the morning and kind of be aware of my thoughts. It's really great. I practice every day, sometimes twice a day, and I'm really glad that I can do that. So it wasn't too long ago, a good friend of mine called me up, and we were talking about what he was doing, and he was working with a company called Hydrus. And I said, well, what's Hydrus? And he said, well, it's a hydration system, and it makes a huge difference if you do any kind of exercise or whatever. And I was like, send it to me, because at the amount of practice that I have doing yoga every day, which I'm not saying I'm Mr. Yoga, there are other people that practice more than I do, but I would get sore, and I was starting to struggle a little bit with the soreness and some of the pain that would degrade my practice. So Bob sent me a huge shipment of this stuff called Hydrus, Hydrus. Now, I could give you a long and involved explanation of what it is, but basically it uses an exclusive technology to deliver critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. There is no sugar in it. You add it to water. Now, I always drank water, but one of the things that we're learning is that people are can be dehydrated or at various levels of dehydration, which if you do a lot of physical labor, or if you play sports or do yoga or CrossFit or SoulCycle or Orange Theory or anything else, work out with weights, you'll be amazed at the difference in your practice, whatever that is, if you use Hydrus. And so I'm doing yoga in hot rooms, I'm sweating a lot, and I I always drank a lot of water, but as soon as I started using Hydrus, I couldn't believe the difference it made in my practice. It gives me the edge I'm looking for, so I can take it to the edge. And with my personality, taking it to the edge is actually what it's all about. And like I said, if you think just drinking water does the same thing, it's really different. Hydrus, increased work capacity, no bloating. It reduces fatigue and cramping, improves recovery. It uses no sugar and there's no calories. And it's been tested with world-class athletes. So if you have a kid that plays hockey, if you have a college student doing wrestling or some kind of college sport, if you are a runner, all of those things, your day-to-day athletic practice, their day-to-day athletic practice is going to be massively improved by Hydrus. Before, during, and after exercise, join the performance hydration revolution. It's incredible. I can testify it to you by myself. Check it out at HydrusPerformance.com, H-Y-D-R-U-S Performance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. You go to their website. It'll show you how to use it. You can get free samples, etc. Or you can click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thanks you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, so I told you why I've given you an example of business news and how they predict the future with business news. And they're constantly telling you whether the economy is going to get better or worse. And it's usually based on just hot air. I told you about the whole cheaper gas acting as a tax cut. That is a theme that won't go away. It's funny because it was dispelled because they started that out in the spring. They said, "Oh, the summer driving season is going to be great because gas is going to be cheaper and it's going to act like a tax cut and we're going to see economic growth out of it." And then when we didn't, it went away. And you saw some people reporting on how, well, you know, the truth of the matter is you had to look for it. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, a slowdown in a lower gas prices means that the producers of the commodity are going to have to lay people off. There'll be less drilling. You'll see a slowdown in manufacturing, which is true. You did, because that's what happens. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a positive thing. But the idea was that somehow there was going to be an offset and that we were going to be happy because cheap gas was going to mean people were going to go buy cars and houses and all this wonderful stuff as a result of cheaper gas. And, you know, it didn't make much of a difference at all because, you know, people have health insurance premiums that are going up, or they put the money in a jar in the kitchen for household purchases, even if they even noticed it. The other thing is that today, most people buy gas with their debit card or a credit card, and I don't think that it put necessarily more cash in their wallet. 30, 40 years ago, gas got cheaper. People paid with a 20, and instead of getting six back, they got 15 back. Now it's a little different. And they might have had more cash because of that, but I don't think you could have said that. But that didn't stop them from making that prediction. And now it's come back, and now people are saying, yeah, because it's going to mean that. And guess what? And the other thing is, no matter how slow the economy is, we're talking about 1.5 to 2% growth, which is not enough to make up the lost ground from the recession. You see these people consistently writing, the economy is going to get better. Now, there's no reason for them to say that. There's virtually nothing that indicates the economy is going to get better. 1.5 to 2% growth, yeah, okay. I mean, that's kissing your sister, right? It's not the end of the world, but it certainly isn't what you want. And it doesn't mean the kind of growth that's really going, that you can predicate future growth on. It's just we're kind of running in place. And it doesn't stop them from the green shoots argument, which is coming out. Oh, it's going to be a great spring. You're going to see the economy is going to grow in the spring. Or conversely, these five things indicate that there's going to be a recession. And then you have the people arguing about whether there's going to be a recession or there isn't going to be a recession. And then in politics, I get frustrated with it. I think it's pernicious because I think there's a lot of people that predict the future based on a storyline that benefits a particular point of view. You see that a lot. And you see that a lot in relation to polling. You'll see these people that I refer to as the money ballers of politics. And these are people who think that everything can be reduced to an equation and that it's political science by the numbers. And they forget that politics is an art. They forget that populations tend to act as they always do until they flip and change. And then you can't predict what's going to happen. And I don't know what's going to happen in 2016. I can't predict what's going to happen in 2016. you know, and yet everyone wants to. That's why I'm so happy about the fact that the Iowa caucuses are February 1st. And then shortly after that, there's a whole slew of these primary elections, because at least then we will have votes and we'll have something concrete to talk about instead of this nonsense about predicting the future. But, you know, as I talk about this, that isn't even what is bothering me. That is what's bothering me is our penchant or our need to our desire to not only predict the future, but it seems like it's our desire to want to have these gypsies on television tell us what's going to happen. That we, and then these things become self-fulfilling prophecies. That's the thing that bothers me, where a ridiculous prediction becomes a prophecy. And, you know, my favorite joke is that you're better off consulting astrologers than today's economists, because they say ridiculous things. I'm reminded of a story recently that said that there is a shocking loss of peer review and replication in science, and in particular social science. So some professor somewhere will do a study and they'll say that this is what causes this. You know, this condition is caused by this factor. And here's a study that shows it. And we examined 90 people in Addis Ababa, and this is what their condition was, and this is what we think led to it, and this study proves it. You will not be able to replicate that study. I believe that most of the global warming literature that's based on quote-unquote science is probably not something that can be replicated. I think there's a lot of economic studies out there that probably can't be replicated. And I believe that there's a ton of social science that people base theory on. There's a guy named Richard Florida who writes on urban areas. He's an urban writer, so-called. And he's one of the guys that's a big advocate of regentrification in center cities, and a hater of the suburbs. And I don't really care one way or the other. You know, I like the suburbs, but I like the city too. I don't really have a dog in that fight. But what's interesting is Richard Florida doesn't base anything that he says on studies. He bases it on his opinion. He just doesn't like the suburbs, and he doesn't think suburbs are really good places. And that's fine. He's entitled to his opinion, but people repeat what he says as though it is gospel. Another big proponent of that kind of analysis is Thomas Friedman, where he just says stuff. He doesn't really base it on any kind of study that can be replicated that you can say, you know, here in chemistry, we know that when you combine this element with that element, you get this element, because we have done this experiment countless numbers of times, and we can reproduce this experiment and show you that it's true. That's how science develops. We have a theory, we do an experiment, we prove or disprove the theory, and then here's the way we did the experiment, you do it and see if it comes up the same for you. And that's how we learn to shoot rockets to the moon. You know, we didn't start by discovering fire and then go, let's shoot rockets to the moon. It took a while. People had to go, huh, what's up there? And then they had to go for centuries. We had a whole sorts of many different things to do before we could shoot rockets to the moon. And I think it's our need to be told what's going to happen that is really dangerous today. That's why I say it's pernicious. We aren't content with just saying, what's going to happen today? I don't know. I just got up. I'm going to sit here and drink my coffee. One of the things I love to do now is I get up, and I used to get up literally 10 minutes before I would go to work, and I'd get up and I'd make my coffee and I would drink a half of it and then get in the car and head over to the station. And by the time I got to the station, I was running full speed, talking to myself. I'd get in there and I'd start work, and I never had a chance to just kind of reconstitute myself before the day started. And I love getting up and making a pot of coffee and sitting there and pouring my giant yoga cup full of coffee. And then I don't speak. I don't look at anything. I don't read anything. I don't open up my email. I don't check Twitter or Instagram. I just leave that stuff sit there. And I sit in a chair silently for sometimes a good hour, and I don't say anything, and just listen to my thoughts as they kind of roll by, you know, the different thoughts that I have. And usually I don't even capture any of them. And it's the greatest thing in the world to just sit there and say, if someone were to say, what are you going to do today? I would say, I don't know. I just woke up. I don't know what I'm going to do today. I haven't decided yet. And I'm going to sit here for an hour and think and watch the sun and, not do anything. And then I will decide what I'm going to do. And if it takes me 2 hours, then it takes me 2 hours. Instead of rushing out and I've got to do this, that, and the other thing. And I understand people have things to do. But then the rest of this all plays into it. This penchant for telling everybody what's going to happen. There's going to be a snowstorm. We are going to have 6 to 12 inches of snow. It is going to start Monday night. It is going to be a disaster. There's going to be people on the highway. It's going to be difficult. You need to be aware of this. There will be a tornado in Texas somewhere. These people are going to do this again, and we need to be aware of that. This is going to happen to the economy because of this six, and you're getting this roared into your head constantly. And I even hesitate to do it. I hate doing it. I almost hate saying this is going to happen. And I used to do it all the time. This is going to happen if we don't do this, and if we don't do that, and if we don't do this. And I'll tell you what I've learned. What I've learned is most of the time, you're wrong about your predictions. And you're certainly welcome to your prediction. Your prediction is as good as mine, right? I mean, you have your sources, I have mine. But and I think as individuals, yeah, make all the predictions you want. Who cares? But when it comes to broadcasting that stuff and saying this is going to happen and that's going to happen, and if this doesn't happen, if that's going to happen, Trump's going to have this and Joe's going to have that, and Rubio's this and Jeb Bush that and New Hampshire this, and God, I just want it to happen. So I find myself just wishing it would just happen so we could at least talk about, well, this happened, Okay, now let's talk about something that actually happened and discuss that instead of trying to tell everyone, here's what is going to happen this week, and here's what's going to happen today, and here's what's going to happen tomorrow. And I wonder what it'd be like if we didn't have to listen to that. And I'll tell you, there'd be a lot of dead air because most of our media is caught up with this need to tell you what is going to happen, as though somehow forewarned is forearmed, but you're not being forewarned. Your brain is being filled with nonsense about what's going to happen, when half the time the assumptions based on the prediction of what's going to happen are absolutely ridiculous. For example, cheaper gas acts like a tax cut. Well, until it doesn't. And then what? People generally vote this way in off-year elections or in presidential elections. Well, until they don't. People want this, and this is why, and this one over here is a populist, and therefore they will do this. Except what happens if it doesn't work out that way? What about your prediction then? It's going to be this kind of election. Before anybody has a chance to think for themselves, sit there in their chair silently and think about what they think, and then go and vote accordingly or not vote accordingly. So if you turn it off, I'm not saying news cleanse. I'm certainly a big fan of that, but I'm saying if they weren't in the, and this is the key thing about pointing out one of the biggest reasons and one of the biggest examples of how we are so ill-served by the media that we have today. We have this incredible mechanism, that can show us anything, that can tell us about anything. We have at least on the technical level, we have an incredible mechanism that can teach us all sorts of things, but spends most of its time sitting in front of a crystal ball. To the extent that maybe what we need to do is pass a law to make them all wear gypsy clothes. No, I'm sorry. I should start a news channel where all of the newscasters wear and sit in front of crystal balls, and the video is in the crystal ball instead of on the screen. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Because that's what they do all day, is just tell you what's going to happen, as though somehow they're pre-warning you of this thing that's going to happen. But if you spend any time listening to tarot card readers or astrologers or anybody like that, their predictions are just as valuable, basically not valuable at all, as the newscasters and the business writers at Bloomberg and MarketWatch and CBS and everything else telling you what's going to happen with the market today. Or you get up early in the morning and watch Bloomberg, and they're going to tell you what's going to happen in the markets today, because this is what happened in China and here's why. Sometimes they're right, But I don't know, does that mean that you are better able to make an informed investment decision because of something you heard on Bloomberg today? I would love to hear more facts about business. I like that. I would love to hear more facts about politics. That doesn't bother me at all. And I'm talking about who, what, where, when. For example, I went online tonight because I'm going to be going down to Iowa to cover the presidential debates down there. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go online tonight and I'm going to get a list of political events in Iowa. And I'm pretty good at searching stuff on the internet. And it took me a long time to find a list of political events. And it's usually, and it's all siloed. So here's all the Republican events. Here's all the Democrat events. So you don't get to see an amalgamated list of political events in Iowa. Oh, Bernie Sanders is going to be here and Donald Trump's going to be there. So maybe I can go to the Bernie Sanders thing and then I can go to the Donald Trump thing. God forbid anyone would actually cross lines and go see something that didn't necessarily agree with their point of view. And it took a long time to just find a few pieces of information about some stuff going on in Iowa. And then I've got, you know, 12, 15 other states that I'm going to be going to, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, over the next month or two or so. And so actually looking for a what. You know, you can find an awful lot of articles about if you do a search, you say political events in Iowa, you're going to get an awful lot of analysis about political events in Iowa. But I just want a list of political events. What? Now, I found it finally, but it's not right at the top of the list. Where is another one? Where is this going to happen? Well, it says Donald Trump's going to be in Iowa, yada, yada, yada. You know, Rick Santorum, yada, yada, yada. That doesn't say where. When? Well, what time is it going to be? Is it noon or is it 4:30 p.m.? Or, that's not in there. You got to go to somebody's website to find it, and they may not post it. So who, what, where, when, how? The how, no, because the how and the why are all tied up in telling that reporter's truth about why it's happening and what it means and how this one's going to win or that one's going to win or this is why people are going to say this in the polls or have said this in the polls and this is what's going to happen and God help us all if Donald Trump gets elected president. That's the kind of stuff that passes for actual news, which is merely a chronicle of events that have occurred. There was an accident on Highway 12. A Suburban hit a Mazda and four people were killed. Okay. Do I want to know why? Yes, I do. But the why is not there yet. That doesn't stop somebody from telling me why. Now, in politics, not in that case, but in politics, it doesn't stop them from telling you the why because they have to tell you the why, whether they know it or not. They're going to tell you why. And I suppose I'm guilty of the same thing, but I really try to keep it to a minimum. This is why I have the penchant for going out and actually seeing what's going on out there. And honestly, when I go out and I ride around the country, I don't know what to think because the country looks okay to me and the roads seem fine to me. And then I go out and I talk to people and I'm not, you know, it changes my perspective because I don't see how somebody can go out and predict the future at some political event or sit in New York City and read a bunch of articles and read them. Now, I'm as good as anyone at connecting the dots and pulling a series of news stories and going through and pulling out. And what I do is look for confirmation of facts and say, okay, this, I know this is a fact. I know that's a fact. Maybe I can make some kind of prediction based on this. Maybe I can say, watch for this, which is what I try to do, is to tell you what to watch for. But it's getting really bad. It's getting, I feel better after doing this podcast and talking about it, but it's getting really bad in terms of just finding real content that isn't some kind of fortune telling. And we really need to watch out for that, both in ourselves. And this is one of the reasons. First of all, I'll just tell you, and here I am again. Now I'm really rolling and it's 32 minutes into the podcast, but I'll just end with this thought. I think that the whole structure of our media is going to change significantly and probably as the result of this election cycle. And I don't mean to predict the future, but I have a feeling. First of all, I know it will change because I'm in it. And so I know based on what I've done and my experience and based on what I'm doing now, the mechanisms are changing. What people use to watch and listen to media and how they watch and listen to media are changing. But I think it's going to change because the content is so bad. Broadcast content in particular is really very short on details, because apparently when people are watching something on television, due to metering and how they rate the news services on TV and radio, you can't really get into anything in depth because that doesn't work. That makes people tune out. And so there aren't any facts in broadcast or cable 24-hour channels. It's just, let's show something lurid and get some people to react to it. And then they're all going to react by either saying something snarky or predicting that because of that, this is what's going to happen. And that's probably, if I had to tell you something to watch out for in the next, you know, month or two as we head into Iowa, aside from people on the ground, I would say it's probably watch out for the penchant to predict the future, and I will try to avoid same. Well, thanks for listening to Podcast 450. I actually do feel better after talking about that. I think the whole predictive nature of our media is really a problem, because I don't think they're not making their predictions based necessarily on facts. There's a lot of opinion leading into predictions, and I'll talk more about it. This is a theme in these podcasts, and I struggle with how much I want to talk about it, but I think it's really, really important. So thanks for listening to Podcast 450, the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget Hydrus, if you're wondering in the name of that product that will help you no matter what you do, whether it's workout with weights, Orange Theory, yoga, CrossFit, whatever. Hydrus is a new high-performance beverage. It uses an exclusive technology to get electrolytes into your muscles. It really, really works. I can tell you from experience. Visit HydrusPerformance.com, HydrusPerformance.com, or click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. It'll take you to their page. You can learn more about Hydrus. You can learn how to use it and get free samples, or just order some and let me know how it works. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Thanks to the digital sponsor, the Bob Davis Podcast, Alpha Systems. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Here's the bottom line. Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. There's a lot being written and talked about along those lines. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thank you for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. And don't forget Mobile Podcast Command, accepting contributions and donations for Mobile Podcast Command, my Ford Super Duty diesel ambulance, as I get ready to head out in the next 30 days to the Iowa caucuses, the Republican presidential debate, and all sorts of adventures across the Mid-South, going on down to South Carolina and Florida and Texas and the Florida Panhandle and the Keys and so forth. And I really, really appreciate the donations to that for Mobile Podcast Command. So thanks if you've done it. Thanks if you're going to do it. And remember, I'll be thanking you guys specifically for the New Year's Eve podcast, which is coming up. And thank you for listening at Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. There's a bunch of other services now that also take the podcast, including blogtalkradio.com, Google Play. There's a new syndicated radio show, which is brand new. We still don't even have any radio stations for it, but it is at gcnlive.com, and it's an amalgamation of these podcasts, and it's really a different show, and I love producing it and liking it. So visit gcnlive.com for that show, as well as lots of other great shows. And thank you guys for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for your donations again at thebobdavispodcast.com for Mobile Podcast Command.